Our next presentation will be given by Dr. Graham Farquhar from Australian National University. He's going to speak about global dimming, stilling, evaporative demand, and transpiration. So, Graham.
Thanks, Mark. Well, dilling would be right. I don't know if they use that term in America. What, somebody's a dill in Australia, that means that you're a bloody idiot. This work is in conjunction with Michael Roderick. In fact, he should take most of the credit for it. We all know in this room that the temperature's been going up. I'm not saying it's going up right at this last decade or anything, but in general, in the last 30 years, we've had an increase in temperature. And there's a commonly held perception that this will make evaporative demand increase because CO2 will go up, temperature will go up, and it'll become more arid, and that wet country on the left will become more like the dry country on the right, leading to drought and soil water deficit. And this is a clear and simple message. But of course, you've got to start thinking about changes in precipitation. And these are the projected changes, and we've looked at those. And the point I'd like to concentrate on today is where the evaporative demand really is increasing. What are the observations? And over the last 40 years, as assessed by this high-tech gear that I showed here, this is the pan that the Bureau of Meteorology used to have at the Canberra Airport before the Canberra Airport expanded. It's a Class A US pan, except that it's got a bird guard on it, because we've got lots of birds in Australia, they like drinking the water. And so that changes the energy balance slightly. But anyway, in 1995, in a paper in Nature, Peterson et al. Showed that for quite a few places around the world, pan evaporation rates has been going down. And at the time, they concluded that it was consistent with more cloud. And then time Mike and I got interested in it, there were subsequent observations in India, China, reanalyses of the US and the former Soviet Union. There was one exception, which was because Danny Orr wouldn't like to have Israel being exactly like everybody else. No, it's because of Stanhill. But anyway, in general, there's been decline in pan evaporation around the world. And in a recent review, Tim McVicker in the Journal of Hydrology showed that in regional studies, by regions, I mean quite sizable regions, 28 out of the 32 showed a decline in pan evaporation. And the average is going down by about 4.7 millimeters per year. And it's not just pan evaporation. If you look at people who've calculated the crop reference evapotranspiration, they get a trend that decreases as well. And it's interesting that the decrease is smaller. It's 1.6 millimeters per year. The evaporative demand is the observations around the globe, but that it's mostly decreasing over land from about minus 70 to plus 70. Not that there's a lot of land at minus 70, but in the models suggest that you should mostly get this effect from minus 70 to plus 70. But the interesting thing is that the pan evaporation is actually that evaporative demand is actually increasing over the ocean. So that's a fascinating point. So what causes the evaporative demand to decrease? What causes this so-called pan paradox? The paradox being that people have this intuitive feeling that evaporation rates related to temperature, even though that's rubbish. People assume that it should do, and it's been called this pan paradox. And we and others like Jerry Stanhill and so on showed that decreases in net radiation are one important feature in the phenomenon. So it's called dimming, and I had the good fortune to be labelled by the leading sceptical journalist in Australia as the global dimwit. But are there other features? One of the So the question is, I guess, what are the components of evaporative demand? And so measurements are ideally needed of all the parameters that you guys know better than I do, net radiation, wind speed, humidity deficit, and weakly only when humidity is expressed as humidity difference, temperature. I'm giving a hammering to temperature here because there are still people who try and relate increases in evaporative demand to temperature, even though it's been shown over and over and again to be a red herring. So let's look at the Penman, or a modification of Penman's 1948 work, and you can see that the potential evaporation rate is the sum of the top term, which depends on net radiation only, pretty, and just slightly on temperature. Epsilon is just the ratio of it's the rate of increase of latent heat with sensible heat. And then there's the advective term, which depends on the vapor pressure deficit, D, and on the boundary layer resistance, in this case to water vapor is RB, and then RBH is to heat. And so you can see that the dimming would affect the first term, but the advective term could be affected by other things. I think there's, for some reason, that the Thornthwaite is still used in court cases here in the US between states arguing about water rights and so on. And so it's a problem, because if you use a measure that depends on temperature and you've got climate change going on with temperature going up, you automatically start assuming that the evaporative demand is going up, whereas in fact it shouldn't be the case. It's also a popular misconception that drought's been increasing in drought intensity. And anyway, let's not mix up measures of evaporative demand that rely on temperature with real physics like Penman. So we used a modification of Penman's equation and showed that analysed the various places around Australia where pan evaporation was also going down, and yes, there were places where dimming was the problem, decreases in net radiation, but also we found perhaps more important was a decrease in wind speed, which we called stilling. So global dimming and global stilling. And in that paper, which we published in Geophysical Research Letters in 2007, we pointed out that it wasn't only Australia where wind speed was going down. If you examine the data, it was going down in China, US, Tibet, Italy, New Zealand, and Canada. The only place we could find where wind speed was going up was Antarctica. And that sort of fits the theory that I was saying before, that you expect these effects to be, evaporative demand to be going down between plus and minus 70 latitude, and of course the Antarctic is beyond those bounds. Here's the findings of stilling around the world as at 2011. The pink place, the scale on the left shows in the pink if the wind's been going up, and in the blue if it's been going down. And you can see most studies have shown the wind speed over land to be going down. But I re-emphasise that wind speed is going up over the ocean, although I'm always a bit suspicious of the ocean people, how well they can measure wind speed, because we got anemometers. I don't know what they use. But seriously, I think that they're probably right, because if you look at the data, as you go from the biggest effects are in the mid-continent for the loss of wind speed. When you get to the coast, it goes down, and so it goes the way that you'd expect if wind speed really is going up over the ocean. So the reasons for dimming remain a bit unclear. I know at an instrumental session like this one here, there's lots of discussion about whether the actual measurements are to blame, but I think the trend's been going on for so long that it's unlikely. So I think that aerosol loadings have contributed to a big part of the reduction in solar radiation. But the places like northwestern Australia where radiation has gone down, it's probably clouds because rainfall has increased in those parts of Australia. The underlying measurements are challenging, but they need to be intensified and made easily available more widely. I mean, for those of us interested in climate change, you can go to the web and get really good data on the CO2, methane, isotopes of CO2 and methane and all this sort of stuff. You can get the data on the web, on global maps, for your part of the world and all that kind of thing. But it's really hard to get access to good data that's available to everybody on radiation. And it's bizarre to me, given that climate change is a problem of radiation balance. You'd think that there'd be more publicly available data that we could all use. So I'd be really keen if people could push for such data to be made available. And stilling is also very poorly understood. One possibility is that it's increased roughness. Philippe Sies in Paris had a paper in Nature soon after ours suggesting that maybe this thing that we were seeing was caused by the increased growth. You know, that CO2 was enhancing growth sufficiently that was increasing the roughness. I think that's unlikely, to be honest. I think it's more likely to be sort of, you know, atmospheric, and I think reduced gradients in temperature is one thing. Circulation changes is another. It obviously has implications in agronomy for dust, but it has implications for wind turbines. And there is a sort of a measurement challenge too, to link with the kind of measurements we're talking about, which are typically just 2 meter height anemometer measurements, and whereas, you know, the wind turbines and so on are obviously much at a much greater height, and the question is how those changes seen at the surface will be represented at height. I guess it's obvious to this room why agronomists are interested in the potential evaporation rate, because you go from evaporation rate, you can just extend it quite easily to include stomatal conductance and get the actual rate of evaporation. So I say, what do we want? Better measurements, and when do we want them now? Because I come from the 60s. So we do want more measurements and better measurements, and you know the sort of thing I'm saying. And I'm going really fast because I want to get to a point that I'd like to talk about something I don't have any slides about, because it just occurred to me that I should do so. But I will say thank you very much, Mark and Keith and the Agronomy Society and Apogee, Campbell and Decagon for inviting me here. But what I would like to say is there's a guy, Garth Paltridge, who's an expert in radiation transfer, and he's been looking at, he's published a paper on it, he's been looking at humidity measured in weather balloons. And if you take them at face value, the humidity at height he's measured has actually been going down. So everybody agrees that the humidity at the surface has been going up over time. But when I say over time, I mean in the last 30 or 50 years. But so everybody agrees that the total column amount of water vapor has gone up. The question is, has it gone up at height? And that's really important, because it's at height, up at around 300 or 400 millibars, where the infrared goes out to the rest of the universe, and the feedback, the positive feedback we get from water vapor, that part of the theory of climate change assumes that the water vapor concentration has increased where the infrared is being emitted from. And if the humidity hasn't gone up there, if it's in fact gone down, that feedback, instead of being positive, would actually be negative. And I think it's really worth thinking a lot about. And of course, the objection to it is one that you'll appreciate here, because, and Garth Paldrich was himself the first person to point out the issue, and that is that over time, the instruments that have been used to measure humidity in balloons has changed. And so they've gotten faster. So you could imagine then that the old instruments, when they were hitting 400 millibars, they were still recording something that was at a lower height because they had lower, they were slower, the older ones. So it could be an artifact that humidities appeared to be getting going down. It could be an artifact caused by more rapid responses in instrumentation over time. But given that there's a big change going on between sensible and latent heat, and you know we're switching from sensible to latent heat with climate change, just because of the you know the vapor pressure goes up with temperature. And it seems to me an interesting topic that I'd like to ask Paul Yu about, which is as you shift from sensible heat to latent heat, you've got less buoyancy. And I just wonder what happens to when you've got less buoyancy, whether transfer to height is going to be as efficient as it was. Is it possible that there's an explanation of that kind for humidity maybe not going up as fast at height as we would have expected? Anyway, I'll stop there. Thank you. It sort of changes with time a lot because, for example, with Europe, when they cleaned up the control of emissions kicked in, the dimming reversed in Europe. I think it's still dimming, still continuing strongly in around India and China, but the Chinese are talking about making real efforts there. The dimming that of course is cloud is possibly is behind your question, because it's always been an interesting issue. Is it possible that there's a negative feedback in climate change associated with the fact that more humidity, more condensation, more clouds, which would reduce the climate change effects that are predicted? And we can't really do the measurements well enough. Well, I can't do them at all. Us Earthlings can't do the measurements yet with sufficient precision to really tell. It's a bit of an unsatisfactory answer to give to you, but it's spatially diverse, and I think the best thing is to try and follow the pan evaporation record, because it's easy to get access to the numbers from, but it is an example, again, of the question of the point I was making before, that it's really hard to get access to good radiation measurements that you'd all like to see, especially long wave down and things like that. You can't just go to a NASA site and get a global picture of what's happening to dimming, and I can't understand it. I mean, as I said, climate change is a radiation imbalance problem. Why don't we have the radiation measurements available to everybody? So, if you've got influence...
Danny, go ahead.
Yes, I should have just given some examples. Like in Australia, it's going down by, I think, about a centimetre a second per year. And when we did those that publication, that was a 30-year record. So that's a drop in wind speed of 37 metres a second, which is 0.3 metres a second. And the mean wind speed in Australia is 2 metres a second. So that's a 15%. I mean, that's a whopper. 15% reduction. But your point is a really good one, Danny, that's a reduction in the mean wind speed. And it doesn't tell you anything about the variance. And so there's been some contrasting studies, really, about what happens to peak wind. And some studies have found peak wind coming down, but others have found it even going up. And I think, you know, there's just different processes around, because the peak winds tend to be associated with, you know, cyclones, and maybe the increase in water vapor content may be slightly enhancing them. So I guess I'm just reinforcing the point you're making with your question, which is that the statistics over the full range are not very well represented by just the mean.